This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Here's the thing about all the inflation fears that are floating around out there. We are not going to know the answer. Do we have it or don't we? For literally years. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 12th day of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It is unprecedented, I believe, for us to begin this program with a lengthy missive from the White House Council of Economic Advisers. We do that, not start the program with economic policy wonkishness, because, well, the CEA does economic policy wonkishness like few others. No offense intended to those members of the CEA who might be listening. But that same Council of Economic Advisers started its day today with a Twitter thread of epic proportions, 37 contiguous tweets on the theme of inflation. It is the opinion of President Biden's economic team, it will not surprise you to learn, that yes, inflation is going to go up a bit for a bit as we come out of this pandemic, but then it's going to settle back down and everything's going to be fine. As you might have come to understand over the past weeks and months that we have been talking about inflation as this economy gets back on its feet, there is some macroeconomic disagreement out there about what is actually going to happen. Marketplace's Sabri Benishor gets us going.
In the short term, inflation is going to pick up. For some things, it already has.
Lumber and plywood is up 35% in 30 days. We've never seen anything like that in the last 20 years.
Robert Kelly owns Master Built Homes in Staten Island.
It's not just lumber, it's sheetrock, it's roofing, it's copper, it's metals. It's really quite scary right now.
Some of this is just COVID messing with supply and demand. And this goes beyond housing. People are wanting to buy and do things more, but mills and warehouses and factories take a while to get back up and running.
I think it's going to be transitory.
That's Gautam Khanna with Insight Investment. Transitory. It'll eventually go away. Factories will reopen. And some of what looks like serious inflation now is just because we're comparing this with last year. And look, inflation has just been MIA for years. Here's Khanna again.
Central banks have been trying to get inflation to pick up, really since the financial crisis, and we keep undershooting.
Some people do not agree with this view at all.
We're doing roughly everything you can do to create inflation.
Larry Summers is a Harvard economist and former top economic advisor to President Obama. He points to trillions spent on stimulus and infrastructure, trillions more in household and business savings.
We're set for an economy on fire with the fastest growth in the last 30 years. Look at business surveys of the prices they're paying and the prices they expect to pay. They're at record levels.
Meanwhile, the administration and the Fed say inflation this year will be a blip. Joseph Gagnon with the Peterson Institute says their wording is strategic.
Inflation is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy to some extent. If people expect there to be more inflation, there will be more inflation. So they're trying to damp that down.
So what will actually happen to inflation in the next year or two? Honestly, it's a massive economic experiment, and we are all in it. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
We kind of buried the lead on why we led with that story today, and that's totally on me, by the way. My bad. Inflation and how it gets measured is going to start being a really big deal tomorrow morning at 8:30 Washington time when we get the latest reading on the Consumer Price Index, which is just like it sounds, inflation at the consumer level. And as Sabri said, the number is going to be a little screwy when you start looking year over year because a year ago this month, this whole economy was a little screwy, right? What we are all going to be able to do economically as the pandemic fades, we hope, into the rearview mirror, may well hinge on how or whether some kind of proof or certification that you have been vaccinated is going to be required. Passports is, of course, the buzzword, and it is getting very political very quickly. They could, in theory, be required to travel or to get into big public events or even go back into your workplace. New York already has something called the Excelsior Pass. Meanwhile, the governors of Florida and Texas have issued executive orders limiting vaccine passports use, and legislatures elsewhere are considering not letting employers require vaccinations. So, from the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Getting people on board with vaccination at work is a win-win, says Dr. Scott Ratson, who heads a vaccine literacy initiative at City University of New York. Employers want to get back to business as safely as possible, and
the best thing we could get to is 80% plus of the population being vaccinated, and employers are amongst the most trusted sources of information.
Public enthusiasm for vaccination in the U.S. has increased over time, but there's a slice of the population that's resistant, says Liz Hamill with the Kaiser Family Foundation.
There are a couple of groups that stand out for having a higher share of people saying they're definitely not going to get the vaccine. That's been Republicans and white evangelical Christians.
About 3 in 10 Republicans say they won't get vaccinated, and their opinion may influence state policies. Lowell Pearson is a managing partner at the law firm Hush Blackwell, which has been tracking states' employer vaccination policies.
There will probably be a handful of states that do enact no vaccine for employers piece of legislation, but I don't think we'll see it widespread.
Nearly half of state legislatures considered such a ban, but Pearson says they'll likely move forward in only about 10 heavily Republican states. So far, few employers have announced plans to mandate vaccination, but that may be because vaccines haven't been widely available in most places, says Jill Chapman with HR services firm Insperity.
I know that these conversations are being had up and down the chain across the country, but again, it's a tightrope, right?
She says organizations are looking at multiple ways to incentivize vaccination, like bonuses or time off. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, meh, you know, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. The economic dislocation this pandemic has brought has not hit everybody equally. That is not a surprise. We knew it was happening when the first shock hit back in March and April last year, and we've known it's been happening as the recovery has gone on. And the impact has been especially bad for undocumented immigrants. Jobs that they were often the ones doing, like construction and in the food industry, they were the ones that got shut down. And a lot of those workers weren't eligible for unemployment or stimulus money. Last week, the state of New York decided to offer one-time payments of more than $15,000 to undocumented immigrants who lost work during the pandemic. It's the biggest program of its kind in the country. It is also not without controversy, as Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports.
Early on in the pandemic, you might have heard the narrative that COVID-19 was the great equalizer, a virus which affected everyone alike. Over a year later, it's clear that's far from the case. David Disregard-Kallick is with the Fiscal Policy Institute.
Undocumented immigrants, they're very much in the categories of either people who have lost their jobs or people who are essential workers and putting themselves at risk.
New York's new Excluded Workers Fund will offer undocumented workers as much as the equivalent of $300 per week for the last year. State Senator Jessica Ramos was one of the proponents of the fund.
We need this group of neighbors to be able to catch up on their rent. We need them to be able to spend money in small businesses.
Undocumented immigrants spend money like everyone else, says Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress. She says the whole point of stimulus money was to get people injecting cash into the economy.
And when you leave all the undocumented immigrants out of that, that means that families are making tougher decisions between, you know, where they spend.
Less money for local businesses, but the new fund had plenty of detractors. Several Republican lawmakers on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform are pressing the White House to review the fund's legality and, quote, protect the integrity of the American taxpayer. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Thousands of Asian American business leaders, including Zoom CEO Eric Yuan and YouTube co-founder Stephen Chen, have committed to donating $10 million in support of Asian American and Pacific Islander communities in the wake, of course, of all of the attacks and the anti-Asian hate crimes. Finny Fong owns Greenfish Seafood Market in Oakland, California. She's been in business about 10 years. And in this past 12 months, she says, with the pandemic and the targeted violence, it's affected morale and it has affected her business. Finny, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I imagine a fresh seafood market is tricky because people want to come in and look at the seafood. And that's not a thing people are going to want to do during a pandemic, right?
Yes. Usually our daily customer, they would really try and get the fresh cash out of the tank and clean right there and then and bring home for dinner. And of course, when COVID came, people start buying a whole week worth of grocery instead.
Huh.
Yeah.
And how is business now? I mean, things are getting better. People are getting their shots. I imagine the senior citizens who shop at your store have had their shots. How is business?
Well, we do actually see less seniors. The younger generation is helping their folks who probably order online. Really, you know, not comfortable with their parents or grandparents to be out here. It's mainly because especially a lot of attack going on recently. So things was not as back to normal, I would say.
Yeah. So it's younger people not wanting their older relatives to come out because of all this racial violence. What about your employees? I mean, are they coming to work? Do they feel safe? What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I walk out my store, I sort of pay attention left and right in front of me, behind me a bit. My employees, they're pretty much all walk to work. And are they comfortable? Of course not. Well, I got them all a keychain alarm. And I kind of informed them to, you know, let's wait for each other and walk home together. Because before they kind of walk home on their own time. But now, you know, they pretty much walk in groups.
Yeah. Aside from the pandemic, has this violence affected your business? I mean, that's a terrible way to put a terrible problem, but you know, you're trying to run a business and people are afraid to come out.
Yeah. I mean, of course it's not great to hear from customer, you know, they're trying to rush in, rush to pay. And you know, the only conversation carry with a cashier is about, oh, all this attack going on. You know, it's very stressful to hear that. And we want them to feel as safe as possible. This year we close an hour early.
Yeah.
Yeah, people feel uncomfortable coming out. But, you know, there's a lot of GoFundMe page right now that hiring security for Chinatown. A lot of volunteers come out with, you know, bright orange neon vests and walk as a group. So, yeah, people are giving an eye for us.
This is, it's been 10 years, right, since you've had this business going?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for you to keep the doors open through this pandemic? I mean, did you come close to shutting it down or were you always able to stay in business?
We closed for 2 weeks during the very peak of the COVID because physically, mentally, we were very stressed. We were fortunate enough to really keep the doors open because people really need food in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, Finny, thank you so much. That's Finny Fung. She's the owner of Greenfish Seafood Market up in Oakland, California. Finny, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Coming up.
They just sold out like crazy.
I mean, people do love their cookies, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials gave up 55 points today, double nickel, a tenth of 1%, finished at 33,745. The NASDAQ down 50 points, more than 0.3% there, ended at 13,850. The S&P 500 basically flat, landed at 41.28. 16 billion simoleons, that's how much Microsoft is going to pay to buy the speech recognition AI company Nuance Communications. Microsoft says its second biggest acquisition ever. That would be after what? Come on. Anybody? After LinkedIn back in 2016, it's all about healthcare applications. Shares of Nuance gained almost 16% today. Microsoft basically unchanged. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Behind every successful business is a story. And some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Live video shopping has been around for a good long while now. The Home Shopping Network and QVC came out in the 1980s, but that whole thing has migrated online and it has been rebranded as live stream shopping now. Yes, it was a thing before the pandemic, but given the explosion in e-commerce this past year, a lot of stores and brands and internet entrepreneurs are expecting live streaming to soar this year, and they are investing accordingly. Marketplace's Scott Tong has that story.
Let's all go to the live stream to get ourselves a taste.
We've got a vanilla and orange whipped ganache, and then we've got a chocolate hazelnut coating.
On Amazon Live, celebrity chef Matt Adlard is baking something fabulous to showcase kitchen items that Amazon is selling. So I clicked to follow him.
I just got a follow from Jason and Scott. Thank you, Jason and Scott.
You're welcome. Adlard pours his batter into a square pan, and I actually need one of those. So I type into the chat, what makes a good square pan?
Scott's a great question. So the baking pan I've linked in my shopping carousel pretty much has all the features you want, but you really want one with a loose bottom.
As he talks, a pan pops up on the Amazon screen. Convenient. As do suggestions from other shoppers. Get the removable bottom, one says. I use Springform, another adds. Is live streaming the next retail thing? Well, it already is in China, where two-thirds of shoppers say they've bought something this way. In San Francisco, Kurt Workman is trying it. He's the co-founder of the baby product company Owlet, and he says his initial marketing strategy, just ads and no videos, failed.
We thought, oh, we can just like bid on Google Ads and people will click on our ad and then we'll sell a product. And it turned out to be like a horrible strategy.
So they tried live streaming on Amazon, which didn't cost them any money. Online, they didn't just talk about their products, which track baby heart rates, but also the company's story.
And we actually started Owlet right before my oldest son was born. And we were worried that our kids would have a congenital heart defect that runs in our family.
The live stream did so well in sales and views that its products rocketed up Amazon's search engine ranking. Workman says shoppers got real-time service.
You have an awkward human being talking to a camera and then interacting with an audience, but you're able to close the loop on a lot of questions.
In the U.S., one live streaming app, Talk Shop Live, saw sales grow 7 times during the pandemic. Another, Comment Sold, saw a 50% jump in spending per viewer. There are many new players here. But Abby Holtz, the founder of the online fashion shop The Lobby, says the idea of hawking stuff through online video is not new.
some of the stuff that we see today and we think is new and innovative was actually starting to happen over a decade ago on YouTube and, you know, people putting makeup tutorials.
Today, she says millennials and Gen Z shoppers are demanding video content that's authentic.
They're really allergic to being sold to. So they want to know, what does this look like on real people? They don't want it to be overly produced, overly photoshopped.
Many analysts think early live streaming in the U.S. will grow in fashion and beauty. That's where products have high profit margins, so there's money to try video. And sales of these products depend on the kind of human interaction that live stream shopping can provide. Otherwise,
the journey is cold. There's no emotion, no interaction.
Dia Eliakoubi is CEO of the online fashion site Monia Frere in Paris.
And sometimes you cancel the process because you are bored.
When the pandemic came to France, her team began live streaming to China, where the economy was reviving. She says shoppers in Asia tend to join live streams to ask specific questions. What color? What size? Whereas Western consumers come for a show.
Westerns, they need to be seduced, you know.
But live stream sellers are still learning. Deborah Weinsrig, founder of Core Site Research, says things can go wrong on the screen with celebrity marketers known as key opinion leaders, or KOLs.
I mean, there are big mistakes that happen, right? You know, the KOLs say the wrong brand name and it's live, so it's not like you're rewinding.
So far, no dominant live stream app or website has emerged in the U.S. Facebook and Instagram are trying to be that. And Weinsrig is watching QVC, an early shopping channel from the era known as television.
Hey, maybe you heard it here first, right? Holiday 21 should be the breakout year for live streaming here in the U.S.
Weinsrig thinks live streaming sales in the U.S. will quadruple in 2 years to $25 billion. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report. That's it. That's the whole tag. Everybody's got one of those friends, right? Or maybe the friend is you with the special secret recipe for granola or marinara sauce or cheesecake. Maybe, I don't know. Turns out a lot of those people have recently become new business owners. Registration for home food processing was up more than 65% in New York last year. In Minnesota, that number is up 30%. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab talked to some of those entrepreneurs about what it's like to run a micro food business out of your home.
It's a few days before Easter, and Maddie Gartman is making royal icing, the first of many batches. She pours so much meringue powder into her KitchenAid mixer, she has to cover it with a towel so a cloud of white dust doesn't take over her tiny kitchen.
There is such thing as overmixing, so that's why I have my timer going, too, to make sure I don't overmix.
Gartman is a stay-at-home mom in South St. Paul, Minnesota. She used to just bake for fun, but now it's about business. The icing she's making today will go into a few dozen cookie kits. $30 for 10 pre-baked cookies, 3 colors of icing, and the tools to transform them into Easter eggs, bunnies, and baby chicks. She started selling the kits online when the pandemic hit.
They just sold out like crazy. There were times that people would message me 5 minutes into posting and I'd have them all sold out.
She also took her cookie decorating skills to TikTok with how-to videos.
No, don't throw that dough out. You can use every last scrap of dough, and I'm going to show you.
After a couple months on TikTok, Gardy Goodies has nearly 500,000 followers. The videos are bringing in enough money to build a studio in her basement. And this is the origin story of a lot of home food businesses. A passion project snowballs into something bigger.
One of my friends was just like, hey, man, like you love bagels. Well, you should just start making some bagels.
Ben Grossman runs Benny's Bagels out of his parents' kitchen in Arlington, Massachusetts. He moved home after being laid off as a traveling chef with Cirque du Soleil and started the business.
You know, I was making 12 or 16 at a time. And then like all of a sudden I was making like 250 or 300 bagels in a week. And I just kind of looked up and was like, I think I might have like a business here.
Benny's Bagels has all the usual flavors, plus Asiago Sriracha and broccoli cheddar. They go for $2 to $3 a piece, and Grossman does $1,600 a month in sales. It's about all he can manage from a home kitchen.
You know, you only have one oven. I can only bake 24 at a time. I can only boil 6 to 10 at a time. When I'm having 200 bagels in a day, it just makes for long days.
5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mom and Dad shut down the operation during dinner. And the work is exhausting. He's broken so many mixing bowls that he now needs the dough by hand. He's looked into commercial kitchen space, but the rent would eat up half his sales. He's also considered opening a store, a pretty big leap. Catherine Gregory is president of the New York Small Scale Food Producers Association. She's seen a lot of home cooks try to make that leap and fail.
It just required more time than they expected, more effort than they expected, and also an understanding
of costs and profit margins and how to market your salad dressing or hot sauce. Hot sauce is the thing right now among home cooks. Then there are all the rules. Massachusetts requires kitchen inspections. In Oregon, it's okay to make bread, but not focaccia. In North Carolina, certain sauces have to be sent to a lab for testing. Gregory likes to remind people,
there is nothing wrong with doing this as a hobby.
And that's all some people want. Lata Asher started Auntie Makes Chapati in Rochester, New York last year. She's retired and missed cooking big weekly dinners for friends and family.
I'm not doing it for money. I am enjoying when people, they love my food. That's it.
Or maybe you just need a break from Zoom and Netflix. Maddie Gartman thinks that's one reason her cookie kits are most popular with adults. I sit down and test my decorating skills on what's supposed to be a baby chick sitting in a cracked egg.
Yours will be a textured egg.
That's a very nice way of putting it.
You can tell I was a teacher.
Gartman would eventually like to sell these kits in stores with recipes for making the cookies and icing yourself, plus tools and accessories. Because she wants to keep running her business from home, she'd just like to spend less time in the kitchen. In Minnesota, I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today, consider it a public service announcement of sorts. If the pandemic has you, like some, rethinking your employment situation, Fortune magazine is out with its annual list of the best companies to work for. The top five out of the list of 100, and this is in order, are Cisco, Salesforce, Hilton, Wegmans Food Markets is number four, and Rocket Companies. They do Rocket Mortgages, among other things. They come in at number five. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context to begin your week. And I'm going to repeat myself and hit the inflation thing one more time in case you missed it earlier in the show. As we start seeing inflation numbers come out, comparing today to a year ago, please, please, please read the fine print, because year over year price increases, when a year ago the bottom was falling out of the economy, they are going to be misleading. CPI out tomorrow, 8:30 in the morning, Washington time. Our daily production team is Andy Corbin, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Minju Park. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is 8 p.m.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.